It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the 19th Hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best of the golf world week after week after week. So glad to be back with another episode here. In between our last episodes, we've had a couple of things happen, especially with Rory at the U.S. Open. I had weighed in lots of different venues, and you can go see some of my work online. You go to my Twitter account, go to Instagram, you'll see some of the things that I said. But I'll just summarize it here because it hasn't been beat to death. Rory, maybe a little bit, but the subject, certainly. But I just got to give 2 cents here just to give you a summation of my thoughts on the whole thing. Number one, congratulations to Coren Crenshaw for creating a venue that really, really, really worked for an Open Championship. Congratulations also to John Bodenhammer, my boy Bodes, who sets up the courses for those things. And he really brought out the best of what makes that course a venue that can be used again and again and again. You know that you can challenge these golfers without embarrassing them or making it impossible. And I'm going to retract my own statement because I don't worry very much about these guys being embarrassed, okay? But making it so that you have shots or shot values that are really undoable, where you have to get lucky to actually make a shot. It should be a test of skill, not a casino roll of the dice for whether or not you get around this course in good shape. So I think they struck almost a perfect balance for that, for this championship. Congratulations. I'll also give a shout out to the great Reese Jones, who on the last episode of the show, as you recall, we did a U.S. Open preview. And on that show, we discussed the potential winners of the championship. And at the top of our list was none other than Bryson DeChambeau, because we both felt that this, no matter what you want to say about Bryson, on the course and off the course, the way he approaches things is kind of perfect for a U.S. Open because he's a man with a plan and he's going to stick to it. He has a strategy both with his equipment and his method for how to manage the course for 4 days. And he goes into that event with that plan and sticks to the plan, whether it's working or not. He knows what he can do. And he knows what the course is demanding that he do. And he sort of merges those things into a plan to get to a score that could win. He did it at Wingfoot, and he did it here. So I think he's, along with Brooks Koepka, maybe the two most formidable Open players of this generation. He did his thing. But as I said, you know, what's really kind of cool and why I love doing this thing with Reese before the U.S. Open is we somehow, between the two of us, kind of nailed this thing. You know, I mean, we just kind of nailed this thing. Don't believe me? Check this out. Are there any other players in the field that you look at? And specifically, I look at Bryson DeChambeau, who seems to be, beyond all explanation, anyway, a consummate U.S. Open player. I didn't think he was going to be that, but it looks like he is that.
Well, and Bryson DeChambeau plays his own game. I mean, he has his own strategy, and I think he's very smart, and he'll analyze Pinehurst number two as well as anybody. And I think that's why you hit the nail on the head. I think he has a very good chance to contend as he did the PGA Championship this year.
I mean, come on, yo. We nailed it. Bryson DeChambeau, potential winner to eventual winner. That's not too shabby when it comes to some crystal balling. But Reese didn't leave it at that, because as we close the show, I wanted to find out if he had a winning score. You know, what would he predict the winning score is? Who would know better than a guy who has actually set up that course for an Open before himself? So as we close the show, money, check it out. Oh, lastly, so give me a winner under par. How many? You don't have to give me a player. Give me a number. What do you think the winning score is going to be?
I think like 6 under par, because if those greens are firm and fast, those targets will be small.
The number has been set, ladies and gentlemen, 6 under by Dr. Jones. All right. So again, I just got to say, hooray for us, right? We did it. We nailed it. We said it. It's on the record. And later in that show, we talked about, you know, how both of us don't go in for much for sports betting and that sort of thing and gambling on the tournament and that sort of thing. Just not our thing. But, man, if it is your thing and you won money, you know, how about a little something for the effort? But look, the larger story is Rory. And I just want to say this. Look, look, people do not agree a lot. Well, a lot of people agree. There's a lot of controversy about this kind of things that that Brandel Chamblee says. In this case, when he did his post-tournament assessment, I agreed with it fully. And that is that Rory, look, you can talk about the two putts. Neither one of those putts was necessarily easy. They were short. And people have missed those putts. And you know, in championship play, we remember the guys who missed those. When we talk about Doug Sanders and Scott Hoke and Davis Love, we know that each one of those guys is part of their legacy is missing those putts in those situations. They've missed one in a career. We remember them for it. And Rory hit two within a half an hour. So that's difficult. And it's ironic that he missed those two putts on the best putting day he had all week, which kind of brings me to my point. Look, Rory McIlroy in the first part of his career was defined by a precocious kind of excellence that we had not seen, but from a few players, namely Bobby Jones, Tiger Woods, and Jack Nicklaus. Those three guys were the ones who had won four majors as early as he did. And not only the way that he won, it was the way that he won them. Because again, credit to the Golf Channel stats crew, the list of players that have won a major by eight shots or more is very easy to remember because there's only two guys on it. It's Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. And again, it's how he won those tournaments, going away, doing things that nobody else in the field could actually do to win, so that missing a couple of putts on Sunday really didn't matter. It was more about adjusting the winning margin than by setting a winning margin with those couple of putts on Sunday. So it was his precocious and prodigious talent that was setting the bar for what his career was going to be. And we just haven't seen that for a long, long time. Some of it you can look at and say, well, it's putting on Sunday. I say it's maybe putting on Thursday and Friday because he left a bunch of shots out there, putts that were burning edges, not getting close, misreads, things like that, that came back to bite him on Sunday. And again, when you go back to the way the guy drives the ball, certainly the top three with a driver in his hand of any player ever, some could reasonably argue he's the best driver ever. When you look at how far he hits it and how straight he hits it, when the club is moving, you know, at 120, 130 miles an hour, ball's moving 180, approaching 200 miles an hour, and he hits it straight as a string. When he's got his short irons in his hands, he should be leading the universe in proximity to the hole. He's hitting 8-iron when others are hitting 5 and 6. He's hitting flip wedge and others are hitting 9-iron. He's always got a shorter club in his hand, and he is not hitting it close enough. That's just it. His iron play is lacking. Now, it's a beautiful swing to watch, okay? But this ain't Olympic figure skating, okay? There's not three judges out there giving you points for how it looks. It's just the number of shots it takes to get into the hole. That's all it is. That's the whole scoring system. So he's got to find a way to get his iron play back to where it was, where these 15-foot putts used to be 8. These 8-foot putts used to be 4. He's putting a ton of pressure on his putter by not hitting his irons close enough. And I think he's had a dalliance with Butch Harmon. I think he needs to enroll in the Butch Harmon Academy and get that guy fixed, get that thing fixed. He needs to get his iron play back to where it was. He needs to be able to float a shot into a par three when he has to. Rory, it seems to me, almost literally cannot hit a fade. And, you know, I'll open it up to discussion on an all-time great player. You tell me an all-time great player who couldn't hit a fade. And most of them relied on a fade. And this guy seemingly cannot hit a fade. Can't do it. When he tries to, it's a snap hook. It's no good, man. It's no good. It's no bueno. He's got to be able to be better with those irons. to get himself to the next level. And if there's anybody who can do it, has the talent to do it, he can. Because as I say, when the club is moving 180 miles an hour, he hits it straight as a string. If he was the least bit off, the ball would be so far offline, it's insane. So there's something about his method with the irons that just isn't working, and it's got to be fixed. And it can't be based on how good it looks, how balanced his finish is, how fluid it is, his tempo. All that's beautiful, okay? But we're not painting pictures here. As they say always, there's no pictures on the scorecard, right? It's just numbers, and he's got to get those numbers lower. He's got to get closer with his irons. And as I said in the last show with Reese also, and I think we both agree that he certainly has the talent, and he has the he has everything necessary to have a better second act to his career than he did first. And let's say it's a third, because the second act has been tragic comic. You know, we thought that we were looking at the next Tiger or Jack or Bobby Jones or Ben Hogan, and what we've been looking at is sort of a combination of the next Greg Norman / Phil Mickelson, where their careers are as much about what didn't happen as what did happen, as what might have been, as opposed to what was. There's an opportunity for him to roll off a string of major championship wins that could put him over double digits. I can see that with the longevity that's available to players now because of equipment and training and fitness and all of these things. He could get to double digits in majors. Absolutely. Absolutely. But not without some changes. Because, by the way, while you're getting better, other players, younger players are getting better too. That conveyor belt continues to move. Okay. Father Time is undefeated. But it's out there for him. And I wish it for him because he's a nice guy. He's a good dude. Spend some time with him. I'm a fan of his personally. I would like him to achieve the success that seems predestined by his ability. And we all know, there's more potential out there, more talent out there than anything. Turning talent into accomplishment is magic. That's what people do. That's what we look at, and that's what we admire, because talent is everywhere. But turning talent into accomplishment is something special. That's frame of mind. That's will. That's desire. It's all of those things. And I don't question that Rory has any of those things. Many people do. I think he does. It's not what he wants to do. It's like, how is he going to go about getting there? But I think it's available to him. And I look forward to seeing what happens in the Open Championship year. And if he's fueled by this feeling, let him absorb this feeling that he's feeling right now, this hurt, this wounded feeling. And if he comes out with one feeling like, I never want to feel like that again. And number two, I want to make some other dudes feel like that. I think those were two notes, in Tiger's scale of emotion that he had to call on that drove him. Not wanting to feel crushing disappointment and actually wanting to hang that thing around somebody else's neck. That's what drove him. Rory's a wonderfully engaging person. I think he needs to be a little bit more of a son of a bitch in competition. And that will serve him well. Don't have to be like that all the time. You don't have to be salty every minute of the day. But some of that would be useful, I think, in his game to have that gear. Anyway, so we got it. That's enough for the last show. Let's talk about this show. What a great show for you. We take the show a little bit on the road, talk about travel, talk about getting around a little bit. Of course, talking to us about that is the Minister for Irish Sport, Arts, Culture, and many other things, Catherine Martin, will be talking to us about Ireland and Irish tourism. And also talking to us will be my good friend Mark Spadoni. I made a trip out to the Omni Homestead where I will be hosting an event that is about golf and sporting clays. You want to be clued into that, listening to that, because it's an event. Look, the Omni is a great venue, but this event is going to make it extra special and take it to the next level. So if you like golf and blowing up stuff, you may want to turn out for this one and definitely listen to this next segment. So again, we got Ireland. We have Virginia. It's all good. We're on the road again with the 19th hole. So go get yourself a cold beverage and a crunchy snack. We'll be right here when you get back. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And as you all know, I'm a big, huge, larger-than-life friend of Ireland. And not only because the DNA test says that I'm 15% Irish, yep, but I also have had the opportunity to experience the history, the warmth, the hospitality, all of that, everything about Ireland. And it is spectacular. It's all absolutely true. Joining me today is someone who knows even more about it than I do. She is the Minister for Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sport, and Media. Please welcome Catherine Martin from Ireland. Catherine, or I should say Minister, welcome to the 19th hole.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. And I just love your title. It's one of the best titles of any public official of all time. And I grew up in Washington, D.C., so I have a special affinity for government and titles, but I mean tourism, culture, arts, sport, media, I get all of those. Please tell me, what is Gaeltacht?
Gaeltacht is everything to do with our native Irish tongue, so the Irish language, and then the Gaeltacht communities, the communities where that is still very much the first language. So it's protecting the Irish language, and that's a privilege to do that. And I'd say that's another attraction when tourists are looking to come to Ireland to hear our language being spoken. I know on every trip I do abroad, I always use the language, and people are fascinated by it, that it still is a living language.
Well, I'm fascinated by it too. And I'm even more fascinated actually by the number of actual jobs that you have. I don't know how you find time during the day to get all of that done. It's kind of amazing. You're here in the States now on a bit of a cultural exchange. And I know that we certainly had enough Americans who are coming to Ireland. And that's where I'm going to start with you, with Irish tourism. To me, it's kind of the gold standard of tourism, and especially of golf tourism. You must be mighty proud of the effort these folks have made to get Americans to connect with the American traveler on such a deep and emotional level.
Absolutely. And yes, I just say in relation to the title of my brief, I suppose it is very long, and they say ask a busy woman to do something. And I think it makes a lot of sense. The tourism, the culture, the arts, the sport, the Gaeltacht media, they all are interlinked in how to promote our beautiful island. So from the sport point of view, like what we're doing with the College Football Classic, to, you know, when you think of Ireland, you think of our culture, our arts heritage, our music, our golf, all of that is what attracts people. And as well, I suppose that in the Irish tongue, to say the Cead Míle Fáilte, that amazing welcome that we are known for. So it's the hospitality element of it as well. It's that all over experience when you come to Ireland, never mind the breathtaking scenery. And I would say on the media side, that we are seeing that the screen tourism grow as well from the success in our country of many movies that are filmed on location here. And that attracts it. That's the whole new industry, the screen tourism, people visiting.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a big film fan. And so to see some of the sites that are there, I've had a chance to see the places where some of my very favorite movies of all time have been filmed in Ireland, films about Ireland. It's fascinating. And it also helps that it's always easy to be in Ireland. I mean, I call it the 51st state because it's so easy to get there and to be there. And it's getting increasingly easy to get to Ireland, no?
Yes, we've increased all the member the amount of direct flights into Dublin and, of course, into Shannon as well, so you can get into the regions. Because I always say Dublin is amazing, but do, when you come to Ireland, travel outside Dublin. Take the time to enjoy Ireland to the full. And actually, that's what's really interesting about US tourists. Tourists from the US know how to do Ireland. They come for, they're known to come for a few weeks, and they take full opportunity and advantage of traveling around the country, of seeing that unique and breathtaking scenery, of visiting all the historic sites, of visiting the many golf courses spotted along the coast. And all the visitor attractions are festivals and events. So I would say the tourists from the US know how to come to Ireland and stay there.
And you know what? We'll just keep practicing until we get it right. How about that?
That sounds good to me.
And speaking of cultural exchange and getting back and forth, I know that there's been a recent development where a college football game, the first college football game of the season, which is college football, a tremendously popular endeavor here in the United States, professional football, the number one sport, arguably college football is number two. And now we have the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. And this year we have Florida State University opening the season against Georgia Tech in Dublin. And you were here to promote that and get that whole thing going. I mean, it's already exploded in such a short period of time, hasn't it?
It has, and last year we had Notre Dame and Navy, and I think the television viewership in the US was 3.8 million, and this year we're really looking forward to FSU and Georgia Tech. I just had a meeting with FSU, and they, you know, they expect at least over 17,000 fans coming over from to support the Seminoles, and we would expect in Aviva, we would expect that to be full to capacity. It's over 50,000 capacity there, and what happens is the full city comes alive, and it's a wonderful opportunity to, I suppose, raise the profile and awareness of college football, not just in Ireland but in Europe, but also in it, I suppose this college football series triggers networking opportunities, facilitates educational links between universities, and of course what we're really good at in the US and Ireland, those, you know, forging more bonds and creating more enduring friendships. So this is the main game is on August 24th, but I FSU tell me they're bringing over a rugby team that are going to play rugby with a Trinity College rugby team. There'll be music performances, the band is traveling over. It's really something that is embraced and loved by everyone in Ireland. So it's wonderful, and I think it's a real testament actually to the power of sport. You know, the way that it does bring people together, that and fosters understanding. And I think it's a this is probably, you know, this type of idea, this classic is college football class. It shows the world of possibilities when you of collaboration and what can happen. And it's the cultural exchange, the business opportunities, the potential of research projects. So it's very exciting.
I mean, I think it's very astute that you make that a comparison about another level of communication, because I know that you have a background in English and in music. English, also my major. And though these are literally two ways that people can connect culturally with each other, languages. And sport is another language that people can speak and connect with each other and find out that we're, you know, more the same than we are different. I know that you've got a packed schedule. I'm going to let you go because I'll probably add another title to your list of titles by the end of the day. You'll probably be in charge of the trains or something else by the time the day is over. But I have to come back and talk a little bit about Rorish golf, Irish golf, because the U.S. Open and the heartbreak of Rory McIlroy. I mean, gosh, I know it hurts for me. I know it must be something special and a special kind of hurt for you guys.
Absolutely. Heartbreaking for Rory. I'm a huge golf fan myself. So, you know, but Irish golf is still in great shape, which I can't but feel for Rory after him. But such a heartbreaking defeat, but you know, but I would say that Irish golf is in fantastic shape because we do have multiple major winners. Rory McIlroy, we're very proud of him. We have Shane Lowry, Open Championship winner. We have two-time PGA Tour winner Seamus Power, and they are at the top of their game. And of course, the LPGA Tour winner Leona Maguire. And last week, three-time major winner Porrie Carrington entering the World Golf Hall of Fame. I really do think Ireland is a golfer's paradise. We've over 400 courses, and I think one third of the world's links, true links courses, and they really are with epic landscapes. So it is a paradise for a golfer, and it's huge here. And golf is the world's largest sports-related travel market, actually. And I think it's that combination in Ireland of that world-class links golf and our unique brand of hospitality is a real win-win for us, you know?
I totally agree. And to paraphrase the James Bond theme song, nobody does it better when it comes to tourism and golf tourism in particular.
We do have, just to say before I go as well, we have three major tournaments coming in the coming years. So we've the Irish Open this year in September in the Royal County Down, spectacular course. We've the Open Championship in another absolutely spectacular course, the Royal Portrush in 2025. And then the Ryder Cup in the magnificent setting of Adair Manor in 2027. And really excited about that.
Yes, I am too. And a fun fact is that I've already chosen the room that I want for that event at Adair Manor. It's the single nicest hotel room I've ever had. So I tell everyone, it was so big and so plush that my bathroom had a living room. It was unbelievable. Literally, it was so great. Minister, I just can't thank you enough for taking the time and really getting down to brass tacks and explaining to everybody in our audience why Ireland is so good at everything, and especially good about tourism and golf. It's a magnificent destination, and God willing, and the creek don't rise, I'll get a chance to meet you over there.
Looking forward to it.
That is our Minister Catherine Martin, Minister for Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sport, and Media. And a little known fact is that with the Navy and Notre Dame game last year, I have it on good authority that the volume of fans that moved across for that game represented the largest single movement of American citizens in peacetime. Yes, you heard it right. So if you want to organize a golf tournament, a golf event, or a massive land invasion, you might want to call Minister Catherine Martin, because they're the ones who can put that together for you. This is amazing what they've done here and with the cultural exchange in Ireland. You know, I'm a big fan, and you know, just a little bit more why now. And in case you haven't done it, don't make it a bucket list thing. Just go do it, because you're not going to do it once. Once you do it, part of your trip will be planning your next trip. So believe me, it's something you really, really want to do. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. See you in a minute. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams here, as usual, doing yeoman's work on the road here at the Omni Homestead. I know I suffer, so you don't have to. I am looking out over one of the most magnificent resorts, not only in the United States, but really anywhere. As you know, I've been very fortunate to see places all over the place. And there's not too many places you're going to go that are more spectacular, both inside and out, than the Omni Homestead. It's got golf. It's got shooting sports. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. And it's got a ton of other things. But joining me is someone who knows more about it than anyone else. He is Mark Spadoni of the Omni Homestead. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. So glad to be with you this morning.
And what's your title? Are you sort of like Chief Bagwan? Are you like the emperor?
No, managing director of the resort.
Managing director. Okay, that's pretty cool too. We'll take that one. And how long have you been here at the homestead?
It's been about 3.5 years now.
Okay, 3.5 out of 300 that it's been here. So
yeah,
about 1% of the time.
Just a little dot on the continuum.
But boy, what a mark you've made in such a short period of time, pun intended. But so before we go into what's here now and what's coming up in the future in terms of events, I always like to talk about the history because there's so much of it here at the homestead. But tell us a little bit about the history of this place.
Well, it is America's first resort, going back literally, you know, predating the revolution and the founding of our country that's out there. So that's pretty cool. You know, the actual Warm Springs pools, which started the the reason to come up, you know, and take to the waters, goes back to 1761.
Hey, like Thomas Jefferson was here, right?
Yeah, he was here, as were a number of other presidents too. Okay. So it was, you know, we kind of coined this area as Camp David before there was Camp David.
I'd heard that one before.
And you know, we've had at least 25 documented presidents, and we're doing some research on a couple more now. So I suspect we probably have had probably somewhere between 25 and 30 presidents that have stayed here one time or other.
Wow. If I had x-ray vision, I could see through the walls to the president's lounge that's right in the that main hallway, that grand hallway that you enter into, and then this lovely little bar, cocktail, mixology haven that has the portraits of all the presidents who have been here. And it sounds like you may add a couple there.
Yeah, it's actually one of our new enhancements, you know, to the resort. You know, we knew that we had this opportunity to tell a story, you know, through the presidents. We really didn't have the proper venue for it, so we kind of created this speakeasy bar, you know, where it's, you know, off the lobby, you know, and if you go into the back, it's got a nice, beautiful billiards table that's back there.
Yeah, I saw that.
See all the presidents, you know, that we have commissioned, you know, oil paintings for all of those. But that's also where we feature our bourbon collection. You know, we've got private barrel selects of Blanton's, Knob Creek, Maker's Mark. We also have Smooth Ambler as well as George Dickel.
Yeah, I saw that. And, you know, they have, everybody knows I have an affinity for Michter's, and there's a special bottle of Michter's that's up on the wall too. So
we try to have a little bit of something for everybody.
A little bit of something for everybody. And speaking of that, when we look around, I mean, just as I did this panoramic view, we're sitting here in one of the restaurants with a corner view, and I can see spa, I can see pools, I can see, I mean, activities everywhere. The amenities here. I mean, we could do a whole show just talking about the amenities, but give us a little brief on that.
Sure. I mean, you know, this started as a playground and escape, you know, for the rich and famous and movers and shakers.
And now you're letting me in.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, we'll equal opportunity.
Appreciate it.
But you know, I mean, really, you know, there's different chapters of the resort, but I kind of usually go back and focus right around the beginning of the 1900s, and that's where the existing resort, pretty much started in 1892.
On this footprint here.
On this footprint here.
Okay.
You know, our spa, you know, which is a world-class spa that has aquathermal baths that is there, you know, the Serenity Garden, 28 treatment rooms.
Yeah.
You know, it is the signature element of the property, you know, and I say, I mean, it's clearly the reason to come up here, you know, wellness escape, you know, to be able to clear their mind, you know, the hustle and bustle that they live with day in and day out, and kind of decompress from this standpoint here.
And again, you know, you have to set up for everybody. If it's a family, you got it covered. If it's an event, you have it covered. It's a corporate event, you have it covered. You have the facilities and, mind you, the staff, you know, to make that all work is really, again, a testament to your skills as manager to make all that stuff happen. And now, without further ado, I want to get to golf and then our event, because I'm sitting over here looking at it. If I'm not mistaken, over your shoulder is the oldest continuously operating first tee.
That is correct.
In the country.
Yeah, it goes back to 1892. So when golf was in its clearly in its infantile stages here in the country.
Yeah.
And again, you know, at that particular time, you know, it was a country estate. It was an escape up here, you know, and they were trying to figure out, okay, what's hot, what's new, what's exciting. And golf was, you know, just starting at that particular time. So the first golf course here was a 6-hole golf course. The first tee is in the exact same space or location that it was there.
And it's literally called the old course.
It's the old course. You know,
yeah.
Pays homage, you know, to its place, you know, amongst, one of the first golf courses in the country.
Yeah. And, you know, we think about those old courses, Brookline and all these places, all these things. I mean, just wonderful architecture. It's timeless. when you go out now, we have sometimes the worry that old courses aren't going to be able to be fun for the modern player or that sort of thing. But this would challenge the modern professional, but it's also a pleasure to play for the resort golfer.
It is, you know, and as you're well aware, you know, over the last, you know, decade, you know, there's been kind of a return to the classic golf courses.
Yes.
You know, those Masterses out there, the Donald Rosses, the Flynns, the Tillinghouse, the McDonald's,
yes.
Rainers, et cetera, that's there. You know, and we're blessed, you know, that we've got both the Donald Ross golf course and William Flynn golf course.
Incredible.
That's there, you know. So the shot values, you know, are clearly there.
Yeah.
You know, technology aside, you know, that you go out there and you play the golf course, particularly the old course, which is really the resort golf course. It's fun, but the greens, you know, much like this weekend at Pinehurst, you know,
yeah.
another Donald Ross golf course.
No.
So the greens themselves aren't very big here, but they're also in many cases turtleback. So you've
yeah.
got those false fronts or false sides that's out there. So the premium is in approach shots here, not necessarily the length of the golf course.
Yeah, it's your wedge play, you know, that's going to get you around there.
And you have a good race. Wedge play.
I've had to develop it because I'm still working on those irons. But we talked a little bit about the William Flynn course, which is the Cascades.
The yes. Cascades golf course is clearly, you know, our signature golf course that's out there. That was built by William Flynn
yeah.
in 1923, almost in open, because the parcel of land that was down there was a unique piece of property. But, you know, we had the greats Tillinghouse and Rainer come in, and they said at that particular time that they didn't have enough land. So Flynn came out. You know, routed the golf course and said if we can pick up an additional 4 acres on the other side of the road at that particular time that he can build a golf course that would hold its own. And look at it now, 100 years later, and we've hosted 8 USGA championships, Division I NCAA championship, Curtis Cup. We've got 2 more USGA tournaments
nice.
Right around the corner in 2025 and 2029.
Outstanding. I'll definitely be here on the sideline to watch those things happen because you have the ability to host it in every way, both on course and off course. So it's going to be an amazing experience, of course. And speaking of amazing experiences, you and I met a few months ago. It seems like we've known each other forever.
It does. But, it really does. It's been a great friendship.
We met recently, and one of the first things I talked about was the article that I did uh-huh. about the crossover between sporting clays and golf.
Right.
And this was one of the first places I came when I was learning how to shoot with the great David Judah, who's here at the Homestead Gun yeah. Club. One conversation led to another, and now we are sort of co-parenting an event here.
We're excited about it. You know, yeah. when I lived down in Savannah, Georgia for 20 years before I came here, and that's where I fell in love with sporting clays. And it was interesting. The phenomena down there was more fundraisers. Mm-hmm. New fundraisers were actually being held at sporting clays facilities and mm-hmm. on the golf course. You know, and I started sitting there and going, okay, it's teams. You know, you have, you know, 14, 15 stations, you know, that's out there. So I saw a lot of similarities to golf. Of course, then someone went out there and, it's, you know, and nicknamed it Golf with Guns.
Yeah.
And I get up here and you talk about the event, you know, that we hosted, you know, back as recently as 2016, actually
right.
at NCAA, I mean, ESPN event. And we're going to bring it back, you know, so an opportunity to have, you know, a tournament, you know, that's got one day worth of golf, Stableford format, second day is shooting with Stableford format,
yeah.
you know, and the winner is a combined who knows how to shoot and who knows how to play golf.
We're doing August 22nd through 25th here at the Omni Homestead. And again, world-class shooting facilities. We have 215 stand.
That's correct.
Sporting clay stations.
Yep.
I went through them earlier in the weekend with James DeBose, who's over there running things.
Yep.
And he sort of tuned me up a little bit
uh-huh.
and got me hitting clays again like I ought to because I should shoot more often. But it's a great thing, that great weekend. The crossover between the two and the culture is going to be really apparent, you know, at this event. And then you have sort of the things that stick it together even further. The glue is like a little bit of bourbon,
yes.
A little bit of great food,
yep.
some music, people yep. that you love to be around. I think it's going to really be a special thing.
We're excited about it, you know, and so much, you know, can be said about, you know, getting people together. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
You know, it's all about community, you know,
yeah.
and to be able to bring people together who love food, drink, golf, and shooting. It should make for a special weekend.
I think so, too. And people could just come to the Homestead website to
That's
get information about that.
Yeah, theomnihomestead.com. And if they go into special events, they'll see that it's the Homestead golf and shooting classic.
And we'd
love to have people come and join us.
And we should have people to sign up quickly, too, because this is something, we're going to have a limited number of spaces here.
Correct.
And once people hear, because you had 17 years or so of history for this thing, when people hear that it's coming back, I imagine people will come running who haven't done it for a while. So if you haven't done this before and you're interested in getting into something like this, better do it sooner rather than later, I would say. And this is something you don't have to be, by the way, I want to mention, you don't have to be like a tournament golfer or a tournament shooter.
Oh, by no means.
This is a fun event.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll flight it, you know, so, I mean, yeah, we'll have a championship division, and those people are in a completely different league than we are.
Right.
But, for the novice shooter or, the middle handicap, golfer, or even low handicap golfer that's, really never shot a shotgun before or whatever it is, it's fun.
There you go.
And, the first day, which is part of the package is, you can go up there and have either shooting clinics, and that's with our certified master instructors up there. Or if you're a shooter and you haven't played much golf, you have the opportunity to do the same thing. Clinics are included on the golf side that's there. And it is stable for format. So if you blow a hole or you blow one of your stations, it doesn't matter. It's just a 0 point. You move on to the next one.
Reload, literally.
Exactly.
And get going on either one of those things. Yeah. So for August and the weather too, I think that's another selling point coming from around here. August up here is a little bit different than August in, say, New York or Washington or elsewhere.
Usually we can count on somewhere between 10 to 15 degrees cooler, which is great. And probably 15 to 20 points less in humidity.
You had me at hello.
Yeah. So a typical, what I call, ideal / normal day up here is low to mid 80s, with 70% humidity compared to the 90s that we have down on the coast or down in the the southeast that's there. So you think about it, great event, but it's also a great opportunity to escape the heat.
It is, and if you're smart, we have the days of the event, you'll book for one day earlier before or one day earlier afterwards, because there's so much to do here. You're going to be eyeballing the other things, the other events. You want to make sure you have plenty of time to take advantage of everything that's here, but at least, the things that are at the top of your list.
And we actually, we have an event that's literally booked and in the back end of this here. So this event, is going to be a great, for golfer and shooters. Literally right after that is our vintage weekend, and that's our opportunity to celebrate, the last 100 years, kind of the golden era of the property. So
wow,
we've got everything from ballroom dancing to a classic car show to, big band, to classic cocktail, classes that's out there. So come up for a couple of days to shoot and then a couple of days to reminisce about the glorious past of, travel.
That's crazy. I know where you sleep. I see your house for a year, but I don't know when you sleep. All this stuff.
No time for sleeping is more fun to entertain and make people happy.
No sleep till Brooklyn. I got it. Mark, this is going to be an amazing event. Again, where can we get more information?
TheOmniHomestead.com. And I look under special events, and it's the Homestead Golf and Shooting Classic.
Yes, it's going to be amazing. I'm going to be there. You're going to be there. I hope everybody who's listening is going to be there too. Mark, I know you got it right. Thanks so much for taking the time. It's an amazing property here.
Thank you very much. And we're looking forward to having your audience come up and join us.
You got it. That is Mark Spadoni of the Omni Homestead. Again, I've had an opportunity to come to a lot of places, but not only the physical plant, the things you have to do, all the activities and things. I was talking to somebody the other day about the difference between customer service and hospitality. And, you can go get customer service at a lot of places and you feel that. That's a recipe thing. But hospitality is a people thing. And when you go to a place where you step off the bus at the golf course and somebody greets you by name who hasn't seen you in 9 months or a year or something like that, that's special. When they know the last drink that you had, that's special. And that's what you get here. It's not just customer service. And there's plenty of that, don't get me wrong. But there's a type of hospitality that makes it above and beyond. So again, especially for a organization as large as Omni and as diverse as Omni, to have that type of home style feel at the Homestead is something really, really, really special. You won't want to miss it. We're going to take a quick break, come back with more golf and stuff live from the Omni Homestead. It's your boy, Michael Williams, 19th hole. Be right back. We'll be right back. Well, that's it, and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I want to thank my very special guest, the Irish Minister of Culture, Arts, Sport, Music, Gael Taoch, and I hope I'm not missing anything, Catherine Martin, and also my good friend Mark Spadoni out there at the Omni Homestead. Please join us for our event October 23rd through 25th. You can find that information, as he said, on the Omni Homestead website. We would love to have you. It's going to be special, first of many, hopefully, if everything works out like we think is going to work out. And of course, thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure and a blast to do this show. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, go out and hit some balls. When you do, hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th hole.